Spy in the Sky. Interview. Well, this evening we can welcome along a guest to Fly in the Sky, Ola Damagård, an author from Sweden who has written a book called Coup d'etat in Slow Motion. Welcome along to Fly in the Sky, Ola.
Thank you so much.
Now, if you could just give us a rundown on the basis of the book. It is about the assassination of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme in 1986, something which Australians know very little about.
Yeah, true. When it happened, I think the whole world reacted. But after that, it's one of these assassinations that have just dropped away in, what do you call it, the sea of forgetfulness. Whoa. I don't know what you call it. And it's one of these things.
Maybe it could even be a case of getting it out of the way very quickly.
They tried to do that, exactly, yeah. And I can just give a quick presentation of myself. I was born in Denmark and moved as a kid to Sweden. And my dad and my whole family in Denmark was involved in the resistance movement against the German occupation during the Second World War, and also in different guerrilla type of activities while they were under occupation. So I grew up with this theme type of thing my whole life, where how important it is to stand up for what you think is right and stand up for what is true, not is always what you are being fed as being the truth. And then in, I think it was early 1980s, I became very, very interested, if not obsessed, about the Kennedy assassination. I saw a documentary where I saw the Zapruder film, and for the first time ever, I saw, you know, the evidence of bullets coming not from the behind, but from the front right. And I just thought, oh my God, something is really weird in this case. So I started studying, and I think I read like at least 100, maybe 200 books in this area. And I just got more and more confused all the time, because it was like the same people popped up in many different positions. Like somebody was working for the mafia in one book, the same person was hired by the FBI in another book, he was working for the Secret Service in another, and for the CIA in yet another one. And it got very confusing until I said to myself, I'm gonna write a book just for my own sake to see if I can sort this out, because it's so multi-layered and with so many things going on. I spent like 2-3 years trying to figure out what the hell was going on there and how they actually accomplished this assassination. And in the meantime, while I was doing all this studying, I got really interested in the Martin Luther King assassination as well. Also Robert Kennedy and others, Abraham Lincoln, all the way back to Julius Caesar. And after a while, it was almost like I could see a very clear pattern of how one of these political assassinations on a very, very high level, how they pulled it off and how they tricked the public into thinking that it was not their deed, but it was the deed of a lone assassin, a crazy guy. And they always pick a lone crazy guy, because if he's crazy, you don't need any reason why he pulled the trigger. He was crazy, boom, case shut. And very often this lone patsy gets killed or gets put away before he can even say anything. Anyway, while I was starting to see the parallels between these different big cases, the Swedish Prime Minister was gunned down in the street of Stockholm one late Friday evening. And in the beginning, I, just like everyone else, thought that is really horrible what happened. But thank God we're in Sweden, the police is you can trust the police. And of course, within a very short future they will get hold of the guy, and they will solve the case, and everything is good in the Kingdom of Sweden. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was in for somewhat of a surprise, I must say, because
how old were you at that point?
I was, I don't know, 24, 26, something like that, mid 20s.
Mm-hmm.
No, 28, I must have been. And like I say, in the beginning, there was no question marks at all in my mind, because it looked like a very clear case of that they were just shut down by somebody who was crazy and ran off. If you want to, I can just tell you in short details what happened that evening when Palmer
was
shot.
Yeah, please. Let's go through the incident.
Yeah, okay. It was a Friday evening, very late. It was after 11 o'clock at night. And him and his wife, Olof Palme and his wife, had been to the cinema together with his son and the son's girlfriend. And after they came out from the cinema, they decided to walk home instead of taking the subway. Earlier that day, he had said no thank you to a bodyguard. Normally, he didn't have bodyguards, because before the assassination of Olof Palme, Sweden was like a white island in the rest of the world, where there was no corruption officially, there was no violence, there were no murders, there was nothing like that. We lived in a small little beautiful illusion, where we were being pumped all the time that Sweden is the perfect place, Sweden is the perfect democracy, Sweden is perfect, perfect, perfect. Don't think anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and so he didn't have bodyguards. And when they came out after the cinema, they decided to walk home, and they walked down the street, one of the central streets in Stockholm. He lived in the old town of Stockholm, and they decided to walk. It's about a few kilometers. They walked home, and on the way home, they passed a corner of a building where a lone man was standing. And when they passed him, now I'm telling you the official story. When they passed him, the shooter just, without saying a word, came out behind them, pulled the trigger twice, and one shot passed through the body of Olof Palme, and he fell dead to the street. And a second shot was fired at his wife, but it very nearly hit her, but only sort of like, what do you call it, grasped her?
No, grazed.
Grasped, yeah, exactly.
Grazed.
Very, very close. Yeah, it passed through her clothes, but it didn't hit her.
Mm-hmm.
And then the killer, there was hardly any people in Stockholm this evening, because it was the last Friday of the winter holidays. So most of the population in Stockholm were on holiday, including the parliament and the king, and everyone else was out of town.
And I'd imagine February would be that would be a cold time of the year for you as well.
It wasn't that bad. It was like -6 or something like that. There was just a tiny little some snow around and a little wind, but nothing. It wasn't cold like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the shooter fired the shot and then right away ran off into a dark alley and then up some stairs like this. It's quite a long stair. And on top of that staircase, he disappeared. And from then on, according to the official story, no one knows what happened, who he was, or anything.
Okay, and these were stairs that were part of an alley going somewhere else. Is that right?
Yeah, they went up to another level of streets.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of, it's quite a big stairway. So it's like, I think, 90 steps or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, what happened after that was that there was many, many strange things happening. To start with, everything seemed okay. There was a police chief that came in and took over the whole investigation, and they went out in the media all over the world saying, we're going to catch the killer, we don't know what happened, but he fired with a .357 Smith & Wesson Magnum, and we're looking everywhere. But after a few days, there started coming all of these strange things that didn't make sense. There was like the alarm that went out after the shooting, it went very late And it seemed like it was delayed almost like on purpose. And there were like 6 minutes where nothing happened, like police cars that were supposed to not know about the assassination was too early on at the site of the assassination. They were 6 minutes too early, so the official alarm had not even gone out on the radio, and they were already there. And there was especially one police chief. His name was Gösta Söderström. He was the first police on site, the first what do you call it, officer of a higher rank that was there on site. And he was the one who identified Olof Palme, because when he came there, nobody knew that it was the prime minister that had been shot. But then he just saw that there was a man lying in the street, blood coming out of his mouth, and dead, stone dead. He checked. He pushed. He put his finger on his eye to check for reflexes. I don't know if that is the normal way to do, but he says that was what he did. And the guy, person there on the pavement, was stone cold. He was gone. But and he didn't recognize him as Olof Palme, because there was blood everywhere in his face. And but his wife, Olof Palme's wife, was running around screaming and shouting and saying, "My God, what are you doing? Can't you see who I am? I'm Lisbeth Palme, and that's my Olof lying there." And so he said, "Oh my God, is this really true?" So he looked at him. He saw similarities, and he said, "My God, it's the prime minister." So he went back to the car and reported it in and said, "We have there's been a shooting here in the street, and it seems like it's the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme that has been shot." After that, everything goes very quickly. Other police cars come. They start a chase after the assassin. But there's the witnesses. Everybody afterwards, they're saying very strange things. They said that when they came forward and started talking to the police and wanted to say, "This is what I saw. This is," they went that away. They went this. The police were told they were not interested at all, and they didn't listen to them. They didn't phone them up. They, when normal people saw how the police chased the assassin, they said it was like they were just playing around, you know, joking, laughing, very odd. And there was also a TV crew from the national TV that was out that evening doing a documentary about violence among youth. When they came there, they saw that something had happened. They saw police was there, and so they stopped and said, "What's going on?" And the policeman on site, he said, "No, don't worry. It's been there's been a sort of a gang incident that somebody has been stabbed, and it's just violence between gangs." And so they took off again. Nobody mentioned anything about the prime minister. And the thing is also that it took. He was shot around 11:21 in the evening, but it took almost until 2 a.m. in the morning before the first official alert went out nationwide.
It's a long
So
time.
for almost it is an extremely long time, 2.5 hours, where the Swedish police was not informed about this.
So,
You know, there was
that
no.
nationwide alarm, that was also for other police in other counties, other states.
Yeah, but the police in Stockholm as well didn't know anything. You know,
Ooh.
it was only a very central, tiny, tiny little group of people around the assassination itself, a small group of policemen where the alert went out to very specific cars. Not the re So the rest of Stockholm had no idea. I mean, you have to think that we're talking about the Swedish Prime Minister being shot, not like a drug addict or something like that. So a normal procedure would be like to just put roadblocks everywhere, you know, dogs, whatever, everything out there to block all exits. That is at least my point of view.
Stockholm is consists of violence, doesn't it?
It does, but yes, and that makes it even easier to block off, you know. Because then you can just block the bridges, and you can block the airports and the ports and stuff like that. But nothing was done for almost 3 hours, you know. So everybody that was involved, or anyone who did it, could so easily get away. And then the police that was informed about this, they were sent, you know, like left, right, and center. There was no structured search for anything. It was just one big chaos. And very experienced police that came in, they were put to, you know, to talk to the media instead of searching for the assassin. And so absolutely nothing happened. And once again, officially, they said that they wanted to start this hunt, and they had just got new computers in the police central. And what they say is that one of the reasons for the delay was that they needed to move the computers from one room to the other, reason unknown. They needed to move these computers, and when they did that, they couldn't get the screens working. So this is why it was delayed like 2.5 hours, one of the reasons.
But you know, this is in a purpose-built center, isn't it?
Sorry, it's a
a purpose-built center, like a center.
God, yeah.
Well, incredible.
It's the capital of Sweden. It's the high tech of, you know, it's super sophisticated, should be. But just like with on these other big assassinations, suddenly surveillance cameras stop working. Any kind of, you know, technical things that should help to catch the killer suddenly doesn't work. You know, like when the Pentagon was hit, all the cameras, nothing is working.
Yeah, that's
when Diana was hit.
Yeah, that's one thing.
When Diana was murdered, all the cameras stopped working. You know, when
seven,
Kennedy
seven.
Was 7-7, when Kennedy was hit in Dallas for 1 hour, the whole nationwide, the whole telephone system went down. You know,
that's a fact that was often brought up actually with Kennedy.
No, and it's the same with 9/11. All the mobile phones, all the whole communication, network, mm-hmm. just goes down or went down. And they say that it was because there was this antenna on one of the World Trade Center buildings, but absolute bullshit. It had nothing to do with that. What they do is they block it,
mm-hmm.
so that it's delayed, and then boom, out comes only the official story,
yeah.
not what people actually saw. Anyway, so there was a lot of strange things that normal people, to this day, most people have no idea about these. And what happened that night, but it was just delay. And then also, like, experienced police, you know, like there was one man called Arne Idevel. He was the chief of the homicide, the National Homicide Department. And if there was ever a homicide in Stockholm, he was the first one to come there. And also, if there was a homicide anywhere else, one of these bigger ones, he would go there straight away. This guy, you'd think, call him in. I mean, the prime minister has been shot. Let's call in the best.
One of the first phone calls, one would think.
I would think so, too. What happened instead was that he went out at 7 o'clock in the morning. That's like 8 hours after the assassination, picked up the newspaper. And so, my God, Olof Palme has been shot. He calls in and said, why the hell didn't you call me? And they said, no, but we thought that it's going to be a long, long investigation, so we thought you might as well get a good night's sleep so that you were well rested, you know?
That's good police procedure. Not.
There you go.
Ooh.
Not. And anyway, he was called in, or when he came in, he was put to answer the phones and speak to the press from all over the world instead of put on the case, chase the murderer. And during the night, there's such
incompetence.
Like, for instance, there was only like two people officially that was focused on this case. The other people, they were sort of organizing police cars to pick up alcoholics at the subway station. They were that there was no one that was concentrating on this. The biggest murder case in Swedish history, you know. So there was officially nothing happened there.
So did these facts come out, and were they discussed in Swedish press and society?
No. It's only because of stubborn private people like myself, private persons who've just been going at it for years and years and years and years that this has come out, has come forward. Because from the official point of view, absolutely nothing has come out.
So the official and narrative has held up for the majority of Swedes?
Yeah. The thing is that in Sweden, we have, just like the JFK assassination, we have a patsy here, the favorite of the police. He was picked up like about 2.5 years after the assassination, because the first one that was that they had planned on using, it screwed up in the middle of the night. That was also why this whole thing was delayed. This is my and many other researchers' conclusion, but not what normal people think. Anyway, this guy was picked up 2.5 years later, and he was the perfect patsy, because when they do a thing like this, 9/11 or big things, what they need is a patsy, a crazy guy, somebody who looks crazy, who speaks crazy, who works in media. You look at him and you say, oh my God, he's a mean, awful guy. Yeah, and this guy, he was perfect for that. He even had committed he killed another guy more or less 100 meters from the place. He stabbed him with a bayonet just a few years earlier. So this guy was perfect. His name was Christer Pettersson. And this guy, they used everything to get. You know, they made up evidence. They anything that came from normal witnesses was disregarded. Anything that they could dig up and sort of twist into blaming on him was used again and again and again.
This is now sounding similar to the Boston bombings.
They all are very similar. This is the, do you know, like after, like I told you, I got very interested in the JFK, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, Abraham Lincoln, Olof Palme, many of the, and after a while I could see a very clear pattern, like I told you, almost like a template, how to commit one of these and get away with it. And it was like, I think in the beginning, it took about a year after the hit on Olof Palme before I started realizing that, my God, something similar is going on here. Because I thought, like I told you, it was an assassination. Somebody did it, got away, and everything was going to be treated with dignity by the Swedish police, and they would catch the killer. But after a while, I started seeing, my God, they're using the same template here in Sweden. And I checked it out, and I said, okay, if I compare to the other ones, we're down at, let's say, 0.10, if you understand, on the list. Mm-hmm. And so within a few weeks, they're going to pull this one. They're going to present this in the media, if I check what they've done on the other cases. And boom, there it came. And that freaked me out, because I thought, oh my God, this is scary, because if they're doing this, that means that then the parallels with the other assassination is that the investigation that I put to find out the truth are actually part of the assassination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the thing is, they always prepare a patsy. They have a hit team of professional assassins, often put together from different countries, different groups, no connections, no visible connections, highly skilled killers. And also they have a lot of evidence prepared to get the patsy, and then they have their investigation on standby, so that when the shots are fired, boom, the patsy is taken, evidence is brought forward, and in comes their own investigation. When I say their own investigation, I say the people, the power behind the assassination itself, so that they pull this tank forward called the investigation, like the Warren Commission or the Swedish, there are many different names on these groups, but their only task is to point the other way and say they went that way, they went that way, they went anywhere else than pointing towards where the real truth is.
Mm-hmm.
And their job, the investigation, their job is not to find out the truth. It's to track down people like myself and stop them from digging and putting their nose too deep in these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when it gets scary, because then the people you think you can trust are suddenly the people you have to be careful of and fear, you know, because they have very violent ways of dealing with people if you push it too far. Unfortunately, I have two friends who are not longer with us who did exactly that. And that is also why I decided to leave Sweden. I'm now living in Spain, because it was just getting too close to be comfortable.
Were they journalists, your friends?
No. Not at all. I mean, I wasn't into this because I used to be a journalist. Not at all. I think when I worked as a journalist, what I learned was to ask questions and listen, and also don't buy what you're being served right off. You know, just have a critical eye and check it out. You know, if you get some so-called facts, check it out once, twice, three times from different angles and see if they really stand. And if they don't, there's always a logic to it. There's always a logic to why people lie or try to hide things. Or the truth is very simple. The truth is the truth. If something happens, it's not complicated. You can find out what happened. Boom, that's it. But if there's a conspiracy with different people involved, a conspiracy is like when something involving more than one person, then it becomes a conspiracy. And if a crime is committed in a conspiracy, you will have more and more people involved. And the more people involved in a lie, the more difficult it is to hide it. So that's when it starts getting complicated, or really better for somebody like myself who's trying to find out what really happened. Because when one person starts lying, then the other ones have to try and cover it up with more lies, and then more lies, and then more lies, and more lies, and it just adds up, and in the end, it's just a massive mess.
The story is the story is too difficult to sustain.
For someone like myself, you just have to track down the lies, and to pinpoint where, you know, like what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Now, lately, we're talking about the Boston bombings. Where it's getting to a ridiculous state at the moment, because now they're even using actors and stage things like that.
The correct term is crisis actors.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like now the power behind these assassinations are also the part of the power who created the internet, and they're kicking their own butt now, because now people have mobile phones, they cameras, they've got internet. It's like it spreads so fast.
Yeah.
Information nowadays.
Yeah,
we're
getting a bit off theme, but I have also wondered why they gave us the internet. And I think maybe it was to do with actually the ability to move large sums of money around the world, and then also to get us hooked in their way so they could monitor us.
It's exactly what you're saying. It's like we're totally controlled by the internet, you know, and high-tech digital technique at the moment. But at the same time, it's like a sword. It's working two ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's helping us as well, so that's why they're trying to stop it now. They've been trying many times to sort of limit the internet so it will become a commercial thing, so that they can control where normal people cannot have access to it,
or access only to what they want, to what the
exactly.
The authorities want. So getting back to the Patsy,
yeah.
There was another Patsy that was meant to be involved, wasn't there?
Yeah, the first one that was meant to be was his name. They call him the Mad Austrian, Wilhelm Kram. But his real name was Josef Fritzl, which is he became quite famous in 2004, I think, when they discovered in Austria that he had held his daughter in the basement, held her prisoner in the basement for like, I think 20 odd years or something.
20 odd
like
years, yeah. You see that's
yeah, he had like
that's someone that Australians are familiar with. Made big headlines here. And one of my questions always was, when I heard it, was how could he go undetected for 24 odd years?
Yeah, and I can't answer that. But what I also, it's like question mark for me. Why would they pick a guy like that? But at the same time, somebody with a secret like that, if you know his secret, you can really blackmail this guy as well and have him under control because, like, okay, you do something we don't agree with, we'll just expose you and you will be totally destroyed. And because, as far as I've been able to find out, he used to work for the Mossad as well, supplying passports and these type for the CIA as well. So he was involved on a lower scale. I mean, the assassination was 86, so by then he should have had the daughter in the basement for a few years already. But what, the more you get into this strange power elite that is that we are talking about, who are behind these assassinations and conspiracy, because it's in my opinion, it's the same group of people that are doing it again and again and again and again in different variations. When you start tracking them down, you definitely every time you bump into strange sexual behavior or underage uses of underage kids and homosexuality. Very, I don't understand it. But like I say with this Josef Fritzl, it was very obvious that he was a bit twisted. So why they picked that guy, I do not know. But what actually happened that night is very, very complicated and multi-layered. I'm not sure we should get into it at this stage. But it seems like it was purposely, this guy, the Patsy, was purposely, how shall I say, blocked so that they couldn't use him the way they wanted him. And that was
Intentionally compromised.
exactly, and that was why this whole delay and the whole everything got messed up during the night. It was not meant to be like that.
So
It was meant that they should.
you're saying that there was another force working against them, the organizers of the assassination?
There were
Interesting.
two. There were two teams this night, this evening. And like I say, it gets really, really complicated. So I thought, at least let's wait down. Let's wait until I get into what I really think happened, because it. Let's just focus on
On the
the
official
official
narrative.
story.
Yep,
So,
that's fine. Yep.
anyway, no, because he was just after the shots were fired, 3 minutes later, a police car went to pick him up, pick this guy up. And when they came to pick him up, another police car had stopped and was just standing talking with him. So they could, so they, this other police car was giving him the perfect alibi. You see, so
I understand.
they couldn't take him. Yeah, and they tried to get him anyway, and they picked him up later. And then they took him in, and 7 o'clock in the morning, the ch chief of police went home and felt really pleased and thought that we got the right guy and blah blah blah. So he thought the case closed 7 o'clock in the morning. But due to that, he had this alibi from the other police car, everything fell apart. And so they had to create a whole new scenario.
Spy in the sky. Interview to be continued.